Good afternoon and welcome to Shoe Radio. My name is John Whiffin.
And I'm Will Pye. We're coming to you live at 1:50pm on Tuesday the 30th of April. But you'll also be able to listen back to us as a podcast that will be uploaded soon after we go off air.
Coming up on Shoe Radio's sports special show this afternoon, previewing tonight's Champions League action, we're talking snooker world championship action from the Crucible, England's dominance of the Women's Six Nations, and so much more. Plus, it feels like spring this morning, so that's going to be our music theme.
First, though, let's get the latest news on this Tuesday lunchtime with Joe Burton.
Thank you, Will. The time is 1:50 and here are your news headlines. A 13-year-old boy has died following a stabbing in northeast London. A man carrying a sword has been arrested in Hainault. Just before 7 o'clock this morning, there were reports of a car being crashed into a house on Thurlow Gardens. Two officers are among several who were attacked. A 36-year-old man is in custody, and police say they are not treating the incident as terrorism-related.
It is with great sadness that I confirm that one of those injured in the incident, a 13-year-old boy, has died from their injuries. He was taken to hospital after being stabbed and sadly died a short while after.
A man whose torso was discovered in a nature reserve has been identified by police. 67-year-old Stuart Everett was local to the area. Two men have been remanded in custody charged with his murder, as remains found at another three locations in Salford are still to be tested, with police confident that they belong to the same victim. Police are looking for a man they would like to speak to in connection with an alleged assault in a pub in Sheffield. The incident took place at the old Grindstone pub in Crooks at around 8:20pm on Saturday 30th of March. He is described as a white of medium stocky build, about 5'10" tall and with short brown hair. A report has found staff in a London special school have been filmed hitting, kicking and leaving pupils in their own urine, as Whitefield School in London claim they were acting in their pupils' best interests. Nominations have opened in the SNP's leadership contest. It comes after Humza Yousaf resigned yesterday, following criticism for pulling out of a cooperation agreement with the Greens. The SNP's Westminster leader, John Flynn, has been speaking about his favourite for the role.
I believe John Swinney is the best person to put himself into that role. Huge experience, vast experience in government. He ran the public finances, he ran our education system. He's someone who can unite right across the political divides, because we've now got a minority government.
The King is returning to official public duties for the first time since his cancer diagnosis. The King and Queen are visiting a cancer treatment centre to meet medical specialists and other patients. Buckingham Palace say the King's treatment is continuing, with doctors pleased with his progress. The Duchess of Edinburgh has become the first royal to go to Ukraine since the war with Russia began. Sophie met President Zelensky and the First Lady, delivering a message from the King. Buckingham Palace says the trip demonstrates the UK's solidarity with the women, men and children impacted by the conflict. As earlier today, the Duchess spoke about her visit.
While I'm here, I've been learning more about the situation in all its realities, which of course is sad. The human cost of war is very real, and I know that everybody here feels it very intensely.
The Telegraph newspaper is being put up for sale after the government effectively blocked a takeover. Redbird IMI is a firm backed by Abu Dhabi's ruling family. They are also selling The Spectator, as it comes after the government revealed plans to outlaw foreign state ownership of UK newspapers. And Sheffield's Dan Walker is set to reunite with Strictly partner Nadia Bychowka for a show at the Royal Albert Hall. The pair were narrowly defeated in the quarterfinals of Strictly Come Dancing in 2021.
I was walking in a t-shirt to uni this afternoon, and it felt this morning even, but it felt really, really nice.
Yeah, I love being in t-shirt. It just, everybody is so much happier when the sun is out and everyone's in t-shirts, everyone's in happy mood, and it's just a great day, mate. It's just a great day.
For those those listening on our podcast, for reference, you will not be able to hear the music. We have copyright issues on that front. But for those listening on radio and live, Johnny Nash really sets the tone this morning. And it's really a spring theme today.
It's a spring theme of everything. Everything is, the birds are chirping, the sun is out, and it's a springtime for everyone to be happy.
First on the show today, we're heading to the Crucible for a snooker update. The latest is Stephen Maguire is 7-1 up against David Gilbert. Judd Trump is drawing 4-4 with Jack Jones.
Did you catch any of the action last night, mate?
No, I didn't, unfortunately. I was out. But the way you were speaking about it over the phone and this morning, I'm guessing you did?
Yes, I loved it. Two brilliant games last night. Stuart Bingham and John Higgins eventually making their way through after two very tense games that went beyond the 20th frame. They were absolute marathons of the games because we're obviously in the best of 25 round of 16 games. I don't know about you, mate, but I've really got into the pub sports recently.
Yeah, for me, especially darts, I think for you, like snooker, I've always been a pool player, but darts has really taken off. I don't think I threw a dart before last year in my whole life. And now with obviously Luke Littler bursting onto the scene, and like it's really got a lot of people into darts. I've began playing with a mate a bit. I'm not very good, but I've been playing a bit.
Honestly, I don't know where Luke Littler came from. It seemed like one day nobody knew who he was, and then the next day I could swear he was one of the most famous people in the country.
Well, I think he won, was it the World Youth Championship or something? And then it was his first like major tournament in men's.
Yeah.
And he got to the final, which is mental, like how you emerge on the scene like that. And it's the fact that he was 17 that everyone caught sight of it.
Yeah, we were talking yesterday about some of the greatest stories in football, but Luke Littler, one of the greatest sporting stories of all time, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, though, it's time for this.
On to the Champions League. It's back tonight for the first leg of the semi-final, and it is between two absolute giants. Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid, Tuchel versus Ancelotti, Kane versus Bellingham. The 14 title Spaniards versus the 6 title Germans.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing tactical battle. I can't wait to see it, and neither can Thomas Tuchel.
There is no way to play this game without the luck of the day. If you hit the post, it's the inside of the post, the outside of the post. You need these little decisions, of course. You need the momentum, a bit of luck, and you need the whole package if you want to overcome Real Madrid in semi-final.
This is Real Madrid's competition, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the five in a row was amazing. And the players which have got five in a row, what was it, Marcelo or five Champions Leagues? Marcelo, Kroos, maybe? I'm not sure.
How many more can you name? I know a few more.
Nacho, did he get five in a row?
Not five in a row, I should say. Five in the last 10 years.
Five in the last 10 years.
I think you're missing a big one.
Am I? Benzema?
Yeah.
Is that the big one?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're on about? Because Ronaldo didn't. Ramos didn't. I don't think.
No, he didn't.
No.
No, but realistically, Real Madrid and Champions League just go hand in hand. It's the Royal Club of Spain, and they're the Royal Club of the Champions League, having won 14 titles, which is twice as many as anybody else.
Their big players always turn up for the games, don't they? I mean, Vinicius, he turns up. Rodrigo, he comes out of nowhere. He turns up. And, I mean, the powerhouses in midfield, Kroos, Modric, all of them, they always turn up for these big games in the Champions League.
I mean, I'm a Man United fan, and I'm just so jealous of how well run that club is.
Yeah, it's the Galacticos for a reason.
Yes, it is. But you've got some big players for each side in particular tonight that I think really could make the difference to their sides. And I think Tchouameni, do you remember when he scored that goal against England last year? When he broke all of our hearts?
Don't remind me.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be really big tonight. And I also think Serge Gnabry is going to be really big, because Thomas Tuchel came out with a pretty outlandish statement yesterday that he said he can feel it. He guarantees that Serge Gnabry scores tonight.
Wow. I mean, I don't think he's played too much this season. So no, that's an outlandish thing to say.
He's coming back from injury.
Yeah.
Do you think that'll put pressure on you, or do you think that'll give you an immense confidence as a player?
I think it puts pressure on you when he puts it out into the limelight, telling everyone. But if he had told him in person, something like that, then maybe not. I mean, two players we're not mentioning so far, Kane and Bellingham. I mean, they surely have to play a big part in this matchup.
Yeah, massively so. Obviously, the two English guys that both went for $100 million to their clubs last summer. Bellingham obviously going from Dortmund in Germany over to Real Madrid. And Kane obviously finally leaving Spurs and going to Bayern. It's not worked out well for him so far, though, has it?
Well, I don't know if you'd say that. It's worked out individually.
Yeah.
In terms of how he's performed and the goals he scored. But trophies-wise, he's leaving a Tottenham with no trophies to a Bayern Munich, which he won't get any trophies either. I don't think they're beating Real Madrid, is what I'm saying.
No, neither do I. However, if either of these sides do win the Champions League, and then fingers crossed and touching every piece of wood I can find, they win the Euros. Are we looking at a Ballon d'Or battle here?
That you really are, because Kane's goal scoring record in Germany, maybe the trophies won't be on his side, but the Euros would be. Bellingham with his trophies, La Liga, potentially the Champions League, and his goal scoring and assist record for Real Madrid, they're up there along with maybe Kylian Mbappe, but they're really up there.
Yeah, you'd have to say so, and that would be the first time we've had an English winner of the Ballon d'Or since Michael Owen, which would be quite exciting for us as English football fans. However, you'd have to say that the strength of the Premier League is not as good as the strength of English players at the minute, because we don't have any English semi-finalists, do we?
Yeah, it's a bit meant. I mean, we were thinking that both, or I was anyway, that both City and Arsenal might well go through, because Bayern really weren't on a good win streak, or on a good streak at all. And the fact that they both went out, it's two German sides, a Spanish side and a French side, in the semi-finals, you see an English side in there.
Well, you'd think so. Like, we always go on about, oh, the English is the best league in the world, or the Premier League is, rather, and we'd like to think it is, but I'm not sure if it is anymore, because the evidence says no.
Well, does it? It maybe does this season, or it maybe does in the Champions League, but what, last season City won the treble, so you can't really say that they are not. It's not the biggest league in the world. I mean, Chelsea won the Champions League recently, and that was a full English final. We've had a couple full English finals in recent modern football history. So I wouldn't say so. Maybe a year where the games haven't gone the English club's way, but...
No, it's been a tough year for English football, but I think, well, fingers crossed, English football's going to see some big results in the summer.
Moving a little closer to home... In football, the championship season is coming to an end, and if you tuned into the show yesterday, you'll know where our local sides stand in regards to the relegation battle.
Today, though, we're going to be focusing on the battle to join the Premier League next season in the automatic promotion places, or as I should say, because Leicester confirmed their automatic return last night, who is going to find the other automatic promotion place?
Yes, it looks nailed on all season, and despite a dodgy spell recently, Enzo Maresca's side are headed back to the big time. The Italian praised his side for getting through the notoriously difficult championship season.
Fantastic season, a tough season. You know the championship better than me. It's very, very tough, long season, very intense. But yeah, at the end we did it, and we are very happy.
He's not content there, though, and will be desperate for his side to finish the job on Saturday lunchtime as they host Blackburn Rovers. The Foxes have the chance to clinch the title and hit 100 points if they win that game.
Yeah, they've just looked too good for the divisional season, haven't they, mate?
Yeah, I mean, they have, until the point that they started losing so many games.
It's really weird. I've got a mate who supports Leicester City, and he very proudly told me last night that they won the league by Christmas, and then thought, what can we do? Let's make it more interesting. So they lost a few games, made it interesting again, and then still won it again.
Yeah, I mean, I know before Christmas people were thinking that they're going to get a points record in the Premier League because they had won so many games. I don't think they had lost for months. And then they went on a bit of a losing and drawing streak.
They lost like 5 out of 6 or something. Yeah, they were on track for 120 plus points, which is absolutely outrageous at that level. I think Reading have the record currently at 106, so that's how much they were going to smash it by. But they couldn't do that, unfortunately, so Reading still keep that record. But unfortunately for Leicester City, there is something looming over them still, though, isn't there?
Is it points deductions? I mean, transfers are tough ahead of the Premier League.
Yeah, so Leicester, they've spent too much money in the last few years, basically. They didn't sell well. Well, they sold brilliantly for a while, and then they didn't sell well. They signed too many people on outrageous contracts and then didn't play them. And so they fell foul of the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules. The Premier League thought that they'd failed the rules, which they had. The Championship also did. So they possibly were looking at points deductions this season, which they've managed to get away from. However, when they go to the Premier League next season, it's looking like they're going to start with minus a few points.
Wow, probably like -4, -6, how Everton and Forest got. This is the first time I've heard that news, actually, and it's actually quite shocking. I mean, they let big players like Tielemans go on a free, that sort of thing. I can't really remember how much Tottenham paid for Maddison, but probably underpaid the fact that they went down. So letting big players go on a free, players that were on big contracts, yes, but on a free, who they could have got a lot of money out, is not looking good for their financial.
No, and also you've got the training ground, which is one of the best in Europe, and it's amazing, and nobody's denying that. But when they bought that and when they moved into that, they were a top six Premier League team. Now they're a Championship team, and that costs £15 million a year to run the training ground.
Yeah, it's like the have you heard about the Reading training ground? It's Premier League level. They're in League One and potentially selling it for around £8 million to, of all teams, Wickham.
Yes, the Reading training ground is better than the Man United training ground, according to a player who moved there that summer. Do you know how mental that is?
That is so mental. What's happening in the rest of the Championship?
So, the other automatic promotion slot will be fought between Ipswich and Leeds United. The Tractor Boys are the favourites because they need 4 points from their final two games to confirm their second consecutive promotion. That's a bit of a mouthful. Their game in hand is against Coventry tonight, whilst they face Huddersfield at home on Saturday.
Despite his side being so close to back-to-back promotions, head coach Kieran McKenna says there isn't much pressure on his side.
All season we've been very much looking forward to the next one. Be grateful for the work that we've done, the position what we're in, and grateful to be involved in such good games like this. So this is our last, you know, game in front of our away fans, and we'll look to give everything we can in terms of the performance to try and get a result to make everyone happy.
Not sure I believe him there. It feels like a manager trying to protect his players, don't you think? But what an achievement if they manage to pull it off, John.
Yeah, massively so. It's incredible going from League One to the Premier League in 2 years. The difference in quality between the two leagues is outrageous. If you look at the FA Cup, if you ever see a League One team coming up against a Premier League team, it's always a Premier League win because there is such a financial gap between the two. I think it's only three sides in the last 30 years that have been able to go from League One to the Premier League, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, teams coming up from League One to the Championship, people are always putting their aims to stay in the Championship. You see the likes of Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday in relegation battle, and then how Ipswich have just pushed on. They didn't even win the league last season, I don't think. Was it Plymouth?
I think it was Plymouth, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't even win the league last season, and they've pushed on into challenging for automatic promotion the year straight after. They can't have invested too much money to compete with these Championship sides, and the fact that their companions in promotion, Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday, are competing for relegation, it's such a stark difference.
Yeah, it's an incredible achievement for them. They've bought really well. They've obviously got an incredible young manager, and they've just ridden the momentum from last season. As we were speaking about yesterday, they've just gone from last season and just taken every little step in their stride. And Kieran McKenna's got a really strong head on his young shoulders, and they've just managed to do something. Well, they've almost managed to do something incredible.
Yeah, we don't want them to bottle it now after us saying that. We might have jinxed them. Kieran McKenna, as a manager, very young, putting his team forward. He's one of those managers that you could see top teams actually looking at if he can pull off something like this, surely.
I mean, you'd feel sorry for Ipswich after what they've done for him the last couple of years. But yeah, this is the way of life. You do well, you get linked to other clubs.
Can you see him moving if Ipswich can't gain gain promotion in general this season?
I think there'll definitely be teams that are looking at him.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I see him going to that level yet. I think I don't see any problem with him staying in the Championship for another year and proving that he can get another team out of there before he then goes on to take that next step, whether it's with Ipswich or whether it's with another team.
There's one question, though. If Ipswich can't get promoted this season with automatic promotion or playoff promotion, will that dent their hopes for next season?
Thank you, John. The time is 2:20, and here are your news headlines. A 13-year-old boy has died following a stabbing in northeast London this morning. A man carrying a sword has been arrested in Hainault, and a 36-year-old man is in custody. Police say they are not treating the incident as terrorism-related. A man whose torso was discovered in a nature reserve in Salford has been identified by police. 67-year-old Stuart Everett was local to the area, and two men have been remanded in custody, charged with his murder. Police are looking for a man they would like to speak to in connection with an alleged assault in a pub in Sheffield. The incident took place at the old Grindstone pub in Crooks at around 8:20 on Saturday the 30th of March. He is described as white, of medium stocky build, about 5'10" tall, and with short brown hair. And the King is returning to official public duties for the first time since his cancer diagnosis. The King and Queen are visiting a cancer treatment centre to meet medical specialists and other patients. Buckingham Palace says that the King's treatment is continuing, with doctors pleased with his progress.
Thank you, Joe. Now, we talked about a big away game for Madrid earlier, but in the Spanish city, another sport has taken over, John.
Yes, the ATP 1000 tennis tournament has well and truly begun, and one of its fan favourite stars has returned to entertain the crowd once more.
Rafael Nadal's time in the Madrid Open has been an exciting one so far, and he will play Jerry Lehecker in the round of 16 this evening. He beat Pedro Cashin yesterday to set up the tie, but he is not getting ahead of himself.
Well, some moments good, some moments not good. But well, I find a way to be through. No, I think in the third set, even with some mistakes, I was able to be a little bit more unpredictable, and that probably changed the match.
He's being a bit humble there. He certainly had quite a good match there.
Yeah, no, definitely. How exciting is it, do you think, to have Nadal back on the tour?
Oh, it's really exciting. Obviously, he's been out injured for a while, but he's come back. He had the Barcelona Open, which he didn't get too far through, but in the Madrid Open, he's already beat the likes of Dimonor, who's 10th seed, in straight sets in the round of 64. He lost to him in the Barcelona Open, by the way, so that was only 10 days prior, and he's already shown an amazing amount of fitness progress. Now, he said he wouldn't exert himself too much before this tournament because he's focused on Roland Garros, which starts later this month or later in May, unless he deemed it worth it. And now he went three sets against Pedro Cashin. It's only a three-set match maximum, these ATP tournaments, and seemed to be in the mood to win. He won the first set, lost the second set, and his mentality brought him back in the third set. The second set he lost on tiebreak, and he was in control the whole game. So he's got a very big mood to win this tournament. However, seeds 1-5 are still in. So if he wins today, then he almost certainly faces one of the big five, which will likely be a very tough match.
So looking ahead, obviously we're coming up to Roland Garros soon, something that he's won 14 times before. Can't really get my head around that.
Yeah.
However, I'm really saddened to hear, when we were talking about it earlier in the office, you said he might retire after this tournament.
Yeah, he's planning to retire. It would follow Federer, really, as two of the big three to retire. You'd only have Djokovic left. What do you think about that?
It's just sad. Where's my childhood going?
Yeah.
Ronaldo's in Saudi Arabia. LeBron's coming to the end of his career. And now the big greatest tennis players are retiring as well.
They had some amazing matches. I mean, Federer and Nadal had some amazing matches from 2009 on until, like, when Federer retired, really. And Nadal retiring, especially at Roland Garros, it's fitting, but it's also sad because you can see how good he still is. It's just his fitness issues and his injuries which are really holding him back. And I think that's the same with, like, the likes of Andy Murray, really.
Yeah, Andy Murray obviously has been, well, he's struggled to win a Grand Slam. I think his last one was a good few years ago now. And it's just, at one point, with every sports star, I suppose, it gets to the point where your mind's still just as fast as it once was, but your body just can't keep up.
Yeah, in terms of injuries, anyway. I mean, I think he will plan to retire after Wimbledon. That makes sense. He'll probably be one of those who goes into the Wimbledon unseeded, and he'll probably plan to retire after that. It makes sense for his career, for his trajectory, for where he's won tournaments, that those big wins against Djokovic and in the Wimbledon final earlier in my lifetime. I remember watching it, and I was so gassed to see it. It was amazing.
Well, I remember I was aged 11 when that happened.
Yeah.
In 2013. That's outrageous how quickly time goes. But obviously we've got the new stars coming through, like Carlos Alcaraz. He is just an incredibly exciting young player. But unfortunately, when these new young guys come through, that means that the old guys eventually have to make way.
Yeah, it's in with the new out with the old. Sinner is first seed now. He's only 21 22. Alcaraz 20, he's second seed, so they're thoroughly pushing the old out. But I still think Nadal can keep up when he's not injured. I mean, again, it would be fitting, and some people do want to retire on a high. It would be fitting for him to retire on a high at Roland Garros,
especially on the clay, where he's been the greatest player of all time without any shadow of a doubt on that surface.
There were talks of them putting either naming a court after him, wasn't it, or putting a statue up outside Roland Garros.
I think that's the least he deserves. I think the whole tournament should be named after him, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of wins he's had, it's exceptional. Now, some very sad news to bring to you, with Francis Ngannou announcing the death of his 15-month-old son, Kobe. The former UFC star was most recently on our screens fighting Anthony Joshua.
He said via X, "My little boy, my mate, my partner Kobe was full of life and joy. Now he's lying without life. I shouted his name over and over, but he's not responding. I was my best self next to him, and now I have no clue of who I am. Life is so unfair to hit us where it hurts the most."
Yes, we're coming up to one of the biggest boxing fights of all time, and it's going to involve a YouTuber and a 57-year-old, John. Who'd have thought that would be the case 20 years ago?
It's crazy, isn't it? But whether the old guard like it or not, influencer boxing is just massively on the rise.
The big news overnight is that this fight will be sanctioned by the State of Texas Boxing Federation, and so it will go on the record of both boxers. Tyson's currently stands at 50 wins, 6 losses and 2 draws, while Paul's stands at 9 wins and 1 loss. Joe Rogan made his opinion pretty clear on Paul's decision to take this fight.
Biggest fight.
Yeah, the biggest ever.
Ever. It's on pace to be the biggest fight ever.
Yes, and we're involved.
We're involved, right?
We're involved. All those big chefs, all the biggest athletes in the world.
So that was the guys trying to promote their own fight. That was Jake Paul and Mike Tyson introducing it there. And now we're going to introduce to you what Joe Rogan thought when he first saw the fight.
Just forget that Jake Paul is a YouTube guy and watch him box.
Yeah.
The kid can fight. Mm-hmm. 100%.
But the one thing he doesn't want to do is fight Mike.
No.
He wants to.
Why?
What are your thoughts on these two fighting, mate?
It's a bit mental, isn't it? I mean, Mike Tyson hasn't fought in a while. And Jake Paul is obviously on the come up of his career, although the only actual boxer that he's fought he's lost to.
Yeah, so obviously he fought Tommy Fury, was it the end of last year? Or was it the end of last year, I think. And he obviously lost. I thought it was quite a close fight, that Tommy Fury, considering he's been boxing his whole life, should have put him away a lot quicker. But it's one of these things, it's a generational gap here, because there's a lot of people, I'd say 95% of people at the age of Mike Tyson, I had no idea who Jake Paul was. And yet, suddenly, he's been thrust into the limelight, or into the mainstream limelight, and he's fighting Mike Tyson, the guy who is one of the greatest boxers of all time. It's hard to get your head around, isn't it?
I think what I'm so surprised about is the fact that it's been sanctioned as a professional fight. I mean, I think Mike Tyson's last fight was an exhibition, and you see the likes of like Logan Paul fighting Floyd Mayweather, that was an exhibition. So I would have thought that someone in their 20s fighting someone in their 50s would be an exhibition fight, not a professional one.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, I don't know whether you've seen any of the clips of Tyson training online, and he's lost a lot of speed, as anybody does when they get to 57 years old. He's not slow by any stretch of the imagination. And don't get me wrong, I'm pretty sure that right hand, if it connects, he will knock Jake Paul out. But I'm not sure whether he'll be able to. I'm not sure whether he'll still have the mental capacity to get it there. And unfortunately, depending on how long this fight is, Mike Tyson is going to gas out. So if he's going to win, it's going to be pretty quick.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Jake Paul, as we said, in his last fight, he lost to a professional boxer, but it was by split decision, so it was a close one, and there was no knockout to be had there, no knockdown either. And Mike Tyson, I mean, you say he's lost a lot of speed, but to echo what Joe Rogan says and would say, is he's still an animal. He's an absolute animal.
Oh, yeah, massively. So he's still an animal. But what I'd counter that with is, and those of you listeners who don't know boxing so well, you'd think, oh, the bigger guy always wins. It's not always the case. I don't know whether you remember a couple of years ago, well, maybe a few years ago now, actually, when Anthony Joshua fought Andy Ruiz, you had this big guy, loads of muscles, coming in against a guy who was short, and he looked overweight, but he was faster. And the speed caught Anthony Joshua off guard, and he managed to hit him so much that he actually won the fight, which you wouldn't actually think. This time, Mike Tyson is the bigger guy, who looks like he should be able to do it, but Jake Paul is the one who's coming in with all the speed and might actually be able to beat him.
The thing is, Mike Tyson's had such a distinguished career in boxing, and if, because of his age, because of his speed, he was to lose to Jake Paul, why would he want to tarnish his record with a loss to one of the Paul brothers, who is a YouTuber?
I mean, I don't want to be too flippant about it, but I can only imagine the reason is money. To be honest, I don't see why, at the age of 57, I think he's been out of the ring pushing 20, 25 years now? Don't quote me on that. But he's been out of the ring for so long, there's no reason why he would come back if he thought, because he doesn't think he can go and win the championship. And a guy like that, he's not coming back to try and win it. He's just coming back for one reason, and that is money.
I think that's pretty safe to say he's not coming back to win a championship, though. No.
Well, I mean, maybe if he thought he was, then you'd say fair enough. Like, at least go and try and do it. But he's coming back for realistically one fight. It's not an exhibition fight, but it basically is. And obviously it's on Netflix, and they're both going to make a hell of a lot of money from this. But do you think this is the day that boxing changes? Obviously, we've seen it shifting. But boxing changes from being pay-per-view to going onto Netflix. And it shifts from being guys who are fighting people of their own weight and their own class in the sport to people just fighting whoever they want.
I think that comes with this influencer boxing stuff, to be honest, because they have such a big pull in terms of crowd and in terms of monetary value that they can get these big boxers or past boxers to get these fights. So, I mean, the big pay-per-views still will earn money. What was the most recent one? Joshua versus...
Ngannou.
That still earned money. But again, Ngannou had just coming into boxing. That's still going to pull a lot of people to watch. But they're going to Saudi. They're trying to get the money that way. Other ways for money to come in is through the influencers getting these fights with these big past or present boxers.
And to be fair to Jake Paul, a lot of people will say, oh, he's coming into the sport and he's changing this and he's not trying to help. He's done a lot for fighters, and not just in boxing, also in UFC as well. There's a lot of people who, including Jake Paul, who criticise the UFC and Dana White for the way that they treat their fighters, the way they pay them and all that kind of stuff. Jake Paul, he's put a lot of effort and he's put a lot of money and he's put a lot of time into highlighting these boxers who are being taken advantage of, really, and fighters as well. And he's doing a lot for the sport and a lot for the fighters. And that's why a lot of people are starting to actually respect him in boxing circles.
Yeah, he's definitely very passionate about the sport. And that goes a long way when it comes to the fans and like them accepting him into the group. He's a very passionate person about the sport. And so with him trying to go all the way, I'm pretty sure he's heading or he's trying to go for a world championship. So him going all the way, his passion coming through and his investment into the sport will surely bring fans onto his side, despite him coming from the roots of influencer or YouTube.
Yeah, you'd think so. You'd think that at some point, either he's going to have to fully go for it, and fair enough to him if he manages to do it, but it's going to be a very tough old job, isn't it?
Oh, a tough one against Mike Tyson, yeah. Beautiful day there by U2. Another amazing song. For those listening on the podcast, though, you will not be able to hear it. And you'll be thinking, what are you guys going on about when we introduce the songs and come out of them? Well, you won't be able to hear it because of copyright issues. But if you tune in tomorrow, you'll be able to hear the songs on our radio about the same time tomorrow. So make sure you tune in for that. 2:00.
On to women's sport now, and an issue that is cropping up more and more nowadays is the increased number of ACL injuries within women's football. Joe Burton joins us now. So what exactly is the issue and how can it be resolved?
Well, it's been an issue that's been rumbling away for a few years now, the number of ACL injuries within women's football. It predates the Lionesses' Euros win in 2022. And at the World Cup last year in Australia and New Zealand, it was said that as many as 37 players had missed the tournament due to ACL injuries and recovery times. And statistics suggest that women's footballers could be up to 8 times more likely to suffer an ACL injury, which is one of the most serious you can get in football, such a lengthy layoff for those affected by it. There's a number of theories as to why it could be the case. MPs have warned that a lack of women-specific football boots could be a cause. Currently, they're designed to sort of fit specifically around men's feet. Some players have suggested that the number of games that players play could be a part. International footballers haven't had a proper summer break since 2020. They've had the Olympics, the Euros and the World Cup since then, taking up consecutive summers. So England's international Beth Mead is one of the players who's been speaking about the need for authorities to get to the bottom of the issue.
Obviously, there's been quite a pandemic at the moment of this specific injury, so we owed it, and I think Viv said it earlier today, that we owed it to the next generation to try and figure out a better solution, a better plan that can minimise the risk of this nasty and not the nicest injury.
So it looks like the issue is going to rightly rumble on and on. As more research is hopefully done, when it is, we'll be sure to talk about it later on the show.
So just for those who were wondering what ACL means, because you didn't actually say it a little bit earlier on, that stands for anterior cruciate ligament. So it's a kind of knee injury that it's obviously getting a lot more common in women's football.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that it's so much more common in women's football compared to men's football?
I don't know. The thing about the boots could be a very plausible plausible theory. That the equipment that women's footballers use are just designed for men. And obviously the game is evolving now, bigger audiences, bigger, more eyes on the game. That could change in the future, so we'll have to wait and see what happens.
I'll have to admit that I was one of these people that I never thought that football equipment was designed for either gender. I just thought that it was unisex, and I suppose that's the naivety that a lot of men are growing up realising, especially in sport at the minute.
I mean, you don't really think about women's football and like football boots affecting knee injury, do you?
Well, it never crossed my mind, to be honest with you, mate, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. This is why it's come out of the blue, and we think these boots, how can that affect women's football and anterior cruciate ligament?
Well, this is the need for more research, exactly what they're talking about, that it's all just guesswork at the moment. More research needs to be done, because the problem is spiralling out of control.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Joe.
That's about it from us this afternoon. If you missed any of the show, be sure to check the podcast out on Spotify.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.